And I'd like to see if Ms. Rocio Elorza would like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Sí, está bien. Sí, está bien.
Yes, I will. Right hand over your heart, and we say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes, I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United
States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, and the invincible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Gracias.
See everybody. Muchas gracias, Rocio Elorza. Great to see everyone here. Very happy to have our third CAC meeting of the year. And now, without much further ado, I will hand it over to our parliamentarian, Ms. Ariel Harmon-Holmes, for public comment.
Can we remind the members to select their language?
Yeah, just really quick. I just wanted to go over our interpretation services for everyone. So we want to make sure that everyone's on the same page. So what we want to do, let me just share this with you quickly. Okay, so for interpretation, at the bottom, if you're on a laptop, you will find a little globe. So you go down to the globe and then select your language preference, either English or Spanish, okay? Also, you may have a cell phone, and that's fine. You'll find three little dots, and you click on that, and then you can select your language preference, English or Spanish.
Oh.
Okay? So that is that, and now we'll turn it back over.
Thank you, Mr. Dixon. Thank you, Ms. Porter, for the reminder. Also, just a reminder as we move forward in this meeting today that questions during presentations and updates, we will first open it up to anyone who's calling in case they have a question. And then for all other members who are not calling in, who are on the Zoom call, if you have a question, put it in the chat. You can either put the question in the chat or say, I have a question in the chat. And then you will be called in the order that your comment in the chat appears. And Mr. Peterson has asked, how do you change a language preference if you are calling in? Very good question.
Okay, so if you're calling in, did you find the three little dots by any chance? No?
When you're calling in, there's no visual.
Okay. Yeah, that's gonna be, yeah.
I would see ideas now.
Yeah. Suggestion, point of order, or point of discussion. We may need to have a separate phone number for people calling in who need interpretation for callers in. Otherwise, I'm not sure we're serving properly.
Noted. Okay. For our next logistics meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I apologize if this poses an inconvenience for anyone who is calling in, and thank you for bringing up that point, Mr. Peterson. Now we will go to public comment. Ms. Ariel Harmon-Holmes, do we have anyone for public comment?
Yes, we have Paul Roback for public comment. Mr. Roback, as soon as you are ready, the timer will start. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for you taking your time for another edition of the wonderful CAC meeting. Please keep in mind, in overall, in general terms, whenever you're thinking about the California Education Code, sometimes shortened or nicknamed Ed Code by those of us who are familiar with it a little bit, the Ed Code sets minimum legal standards for school districts in California. It does not set a maximum bar. The reason I say that is when someone cites Ed Code that, oh, well, this committee does that, or that committee handles that, or something along this line, specific to us, that's a minimum legal requirement. That does not lay out everything a committee is allowed to do. In the case of the CAC specifically, yes, the CAC is mandated by Ed Code to CAC is an IDEA. It's mandated by either state and or federal law to review the SELPA. The Ed Code is silent as to anything else a CAC may decide on its own to do. The reason I say this is because last year, some of us officers, I'm a former officer and a former member, for those of you who don't know me, we were pushing hard to allow the CAC to join the other two district level parent advisory committees, the PAC and the DLAC, on reviewing and generating comments on the LCAP. What were we told, though? Oh, you can't do that. Ed Code says this and that. Ed Code is a minimum legal requirement. This CAC can decide if it wants to review and generate comments on the LCAP. It is allowed to do that. If the Ed Code is silent on something, it is not prohibited. Please remember this. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Roback. And now we will move to item 4, packet review. Ms. Zamora will lead us in this exercise. Ms. Zamora?
Yes, so for packet review, there were several emails. You should have received the first email with the agenda. In addition, you should have also received, we also just received recently the email regarding our minutes for our last meeting. We've also received the special education update of the Division of Special Education report, as well as the presentation for the significant disproportionality. We also received, in addition, the annual priorities document, as well as the document for the questions that will be directed to Jackie Goldberg in her introduction to the CAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zamora. And of course, if anyone is missing any materials, please do reach out to our supporting PCS admin, Dr. Dixon, Ms. Porter, and to find out if they can forward to you any missing materials. And now we will go to item 5, chairperson report. That's me. So bear with me. I'll read to you what I wrote. But I will add in a little bit of extra items that have come up. So again, welcome everyone. Thank you for coming. The Division of Special Education today will be presenting on significant disproportionality. On the significant disproportionality plan that the California Department of Education has mandated that LAUSD have in place by this December 2020. Last June, some members may remember that we received a presentation from the Division of Special Education on disproportionality in LAUSD. The data was sobering, and it's for this reason that the California Department of Education is requiring that our district implement a plan to address these issues. I just want to be clear that not all districts in the US have to implement this plan. The federal government is asking states to identify which districts are in most need of this plan. And the CDA has identified LAUSD. And I know this is something that Division of SPED has already been working on. So perhaps, you know, this plan will be something that will give us all further supports in improving the situation for our African-American students. As always, I encourage the membership when we look at the presentation to encourage you to think about the how. How will it be effectively implemented? A plan on a piece of paper may look perfect. How will it be implemented so that every African-American student with special needs in LAUSD is properly identified and given high quality special education instruction and supports? And how can we as a committed community of parents, educators, providers, and admins work together to carry out this plan faithfully? Also on the agenda for today is a visit from Ms. Jackie Goldberg. I reached out to all the board members and she was the first to respond, and we operate on a first come first serve basis. So Ms. Jackie Goldberg is coming to meet with us. And as a member of the LAUSD school board, this visit is really important and we're really grateful she will be attending our meeting. I want to ask you guys to write your questions to Ms. Goldberg in advance so that when we are opening up the floor for members to ask her questions, that your question is already formulated. So you have it already very clear because obviously time is always of the essence. I myself am always have this impulse to tell my backstory as a parent of two kids with special needs, but we have to be mindful of time so that more people can ask questions. So just remember to have your question prepared in advance and be concise. I also just want to remind you that Ms. Goldberg and her fellow board members represent families in LAUSD to create policies that support our kids. And they also look carefully at the district budget to ensure that funding is properly allocated to all areas of need. In case you're a little fuzzy on the CAC's relationship with LAUSD School Board, I'm including what California Ed Code mandates for the CAC below. And if you look at the report, my chairperson report, I put in everything, but what I'm going to highlight is what's in bold. Article 7, Community Advisory Committee, Section 56194. The Community Advisory Committee shall have the authority and fulfill the responsibilities that are defined for it in the local plan. The responsibilities shall include, but need not be limited to, all of the following, and I'm just going to highlight A. Advising the policy and administrative entity of the special education local plan area regarding this development, amendment, and review of the local plan. The entity shall review and consider comments from the Community Advisory Committee. B, recommending annual priorities to be addressed by the plan. So I just really want to highlight that we are here to advise on the local policy entity. Let me just skip to the next. Advising the policy and administrative entity. So policy entity being the LAUSD School Board, administrative entity being the Division of SPED. So I want you guys to really understand that that is number A or letter A in what the Ed Code says the CAC does. As our public speaker mentioned, it doesn't limit us, but this for me is a fundamental piece of our work as advising them. So having again Ms. Goldberg and other board members coming to visit us is really key because we really want to be able to connect with them. Given this responsibility, a question that we might think about is how do we best advise a policy, in this case the LAUSD School Board entity. In the past, we were graciously invited by board member Scott Schmerelson to present our recommendations during his special education committee meetings. However, since the pandemic began, all LAUSD subcommittees, such as the special ed committee, have stopped meeting. So my question is, will we be presenting to the school board at their regular meetings? Will we be presenting to the committee of the whole? I welcome your input, and we'll be pursuing this as it has not been clearly laid out for the CAC yet. Also, a reminder to familiarize yourself with the local plan, know our bylaws, get to know Brown Act and Roberts Rules. We use these as a guide to smoother meetings. Our guidelines are here to support us and we must use them wisely. I urge all of you to use these laws and protocols to ensure efficiency in our meetings and not to slow the meeting down and to prevent us from moving ahead with the urgent work of advocating for students with disabilities. Also, a word about the question that was posed at our last meeting as to whether the chairperson should be able to ask questions. I want the membership to know that I've taken that question very seriously. Our parliamentarian has looked into this and has tapped into her legal background, and I know that the staff at PCS have researched this and have consulted the Office of General Counsel. We have not found anything that says that the chairman or the chairperson can not pose questions. For the last 3 years, this has been the practice at the CAC that the chairperson asks questions. Usually those questions are focused on clarification or in support of students with disabilities. And the only time when a question is not allowed is when there is a vote happening and the chairperson cannot ask questions or be part of the discussion on the vote, unless they remove their chairperson's hat. I've tried my best to be very mindful of that. And I've always often refrained from being involved in discussion, and when I felt compelled to be involved, I would take off my hat. And also, just so that you understand that we want to really prioritize the membership, so we've created a 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 ratio rule where questions, when we're opening up the floor for questions, the priority is for the membership. So for every three members who ask a question, one officer can ask a question. If there are only two members who can ask a question, no officers will ask a question. So thanks for your patience as we looked into this. If you have any further concerns about it, of course, I'm here to hear them. I also want to say that we have approved the bylaws ad hoc committee and the IEP presentation committee. And Ms. Harmon Holmes will be the chairperson of the bylaws ad hoc committee, and Ms. Amora will be chairing the IEP presentation committee. And they will be, which means they'll be reporting back to the group as to what they're working on. So I said it last time and I'll say it again, we all have very different perspectives. And I think that's the beauty of our committee. We all have to work together. We're all here to lift up kids with special needs. And I wanna thank everyone here. So without further ado, I will take it to item six. Do we have Ms. Goldberg here? Yes?
Wonderful. Yes, I've been here from the beginning.
Hello, thank you for coming. There's so many people on the screen that I can't see.
I know, hard to see it at all. That's wonderful to have a big group like this.
Welcome, Ms. Goldberg. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we will, you know, perhaps you have some opening statements. Is there anything you would like to convey to the membership?
Well, just that I'm very happy to be invited again. It was actually the first thing I did when I was elected a year ago was to go visit the PAC and this CAC and DLAC. And the reason that is because really, as a person who's been in education pretty much most of my life, I think it's very important for us always to remember that when the parents and the school work together, the kids win. And that's really what it's all about. So that's the game here. And I'm happy that you're willing to spend your time. I appreciate it. I want to thank each and every one of you. I know that you do your very best to communicate back to the schools what you've learned and what you can share and to get their feedback. But I have heard your request to connect better between the schools and the district committees. And I have been thinking about that and working on it with my staff. Because of the pandemic, I'm not bringing anything forward yet, but I want you to know that I heard you and that I think it's important that the connections between the district committees and the school site committees be strengthened. I think that's a very good idea. And hopefully after we get through all of the things we have to do to get schools opened, even on a hybrid plan, that will be one of the things that's in my list of things with my staff to work on with you. So we'll be back when we get to that. I know you've also asked me about how do you present since Smurlson's committees have not been calendared. And here's what I want to say to you. Normally I would say, come to the committee of the whole and we'll give you lots of time. But since the committee of the whole will now be used for virtually every committee, I'd like to say to you that we will give you 7 minutes at the beginning of each committee of the whole. I would have said longer if we didn't have such a big agenda at each of them. But I want to guarantee you a voice. So at each committee of the whole, there will be on the agenda 7 minutes from the CAC. I know it's not enough. Believe me, I know it's not enough. But to whatever extent before you come to that committee of the whole, you send us things in writing. I will make sure that all board members get those so that they, when you come, they're already informed about the things about which you wish to speak. So if you get those to us by at least the Friday before the Committee of the Whole, preferably two Fridays before, I know that's a lot to ask, but Friday before, we'll make sure that they get to at least see it before that committee starts so that they know what you're going to be bringing to us. That's really all I wanted to say. Mostly I came to listen.
Thank you, Ms. Goldberg, and thank you for being so clear on the time you can give to the CAC. I think that really helps us a great deal. My understanding is that this week's Committee of the Whole meeting was canceled. The next one is in November?
Yes, and it will be a biggie. So that's why I'm thinking of smaller amount of time. Otherwise, I was going to say you'd have 2 5-minutes. You know, that's 10. But, you know, as I think about, you can use the 7, by the way, with more than one speaker, just as long as it's no more than 7. Because I'm trying not to have these 12-hour meetings with board members. Because I don't think we do our best work in the 11th and 12th hours, if you know what I mean. So that's why I'm trying to say to people, I know you deserve more minutes, but we're going to do what we can do. if we begin to go back to committee, Schmerlson's absolutely committed to having you bring at every meeting a presentation.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Goldberg. Now I'll hand it over to our members for questions. Do we have, okay, I don't see one from a member, I see one from an officer. Let's open up for any callers first. I forget my own housekeeping. Do we have any callers? Dr. Dixon? No callers? Okay.
Ms. Musco, we do have two callers on the line, one of them being one of the members, Ms. Coleman.
I see. Okay. Thank you, Doctor. I recognize your voice, Dr. Mahmood, even though here you're called families@lausd.net. So does Ms. Coleman, or I'm sorry, who is the other caller?
The number that I know is Ms. Coleman, but there may be another who is a member of the public.
So does anyone, do either of these callers have a question for Ms. Goldberg? Okay. So I'm seeing more questions come in. We have a question from a member. With your permission, Ms. Kim, I will prioritize our member and then you will go next. So Mr. Peterson, you have a question. Would you like to ask the question, Mr. Peterson?
Sure. Currently, we're not allowing BIIs into the homes during distance learning. Is that something that we can change?
I think it's possible. You know, part of the problem is with a pandemic is how do we guarantee that the person that comes in is free of the virus, or that the people at the home are free of the virus, because we don't want to be a spreading infection. So I would say if we can figure out, I will bring this up with the superintendent, if we can figure out how to do a testing procedure that makes sense, then I think it's possible. I do know that the county folks are in fact already sending their people who help out students online, because I know somebody who's has one in her home for her son. So, but that's not the district's people yet. So I will bring this up. I think if we can figure out how to make sure the people coming in are safe and the people there are safe, yes, I think we can do this.
Thank you. The next question, we'll jump back to Ms. Kim.
Do you want to ask? Dear Board Member Goldberg, based on the conversations and the meetings you have attended since school closures back in March, what do you think is the most pressing problem faced by our students who receive IEP services at this time? And what specific steps are you and your board members taking to address it?
Oh, there are so many, it's too numerous to mention. I think the biggest problem is for some of the moderately disabled who are having a very hard time doing anything online. And we are discussing with the superintendent, trying to bring those students back that are really not successful at all with online learning to some sort of one-on-one like we're doing with some of the after-school tutoring. So that's being discussed as to how to do that safely. I know that a lot of people want to do IEPs. I believe there is a permission slip now to do them in person one-on-one. And so the problem that some of the schools have been telling me, I've talked to several principals about this, is that parents aren't returning these forms to set up these meetings. They call and say they want a meeting. The school either mails or emails a form that gives the permission to do that one-on-one, and they're not getting them back. So one of my messages to Board District 5 is going to be, send those forms back if you want those meetings. And then the other thing is, of course, even for the mildly disabled, I've heard from many, 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 many parents that the inclusion is working better in elementary than it is in secondary, that they're having harder time in secondary, having the special ed teacher or aide have time to work with the teacher to work out the procedures. And I don't know if there's an answer to all of that, Ms. Kim. I mean, I'm being very candid with you. Some of these things we just don't know how to fix. But those are the two that come up the most frequently to me, the three actually. How can I get a one-on-one for my moderately severe, not severe, but moderately disabled youngster, because he or she is just not doing online. And that is being worked on. That is being worked on. And the other one, of course, is the one I mentioned, which is IEPs. And I think there are a lot of folks that want in-person IEPs, and we have a method to do that. There's a form to ask for from your school principal. And, you know, once that gets signed and returned, either by email or by snail mail, they will set up an appointment. And if that doesn't happen, that's when you call the special ed office and say, hold it, we thought we had this down, but it's not happening.
Thank you, Ms. Goldberg. I believe we have a question from Ms. Daisy Ortiz. Maria Daisy Ortiz.
Sí, buenas tardes.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is related to the IEPs. They're committing violations because it's a legal document. And one of the violations that the district is committing is that they are not doing the evaluations, the academic evaluations, but they're telling the parents to do those Zoom meetings for IEPs. When, if those evaluations aren't being done, how are the IEPs going to be realized with new goals? So my question for Jackie Goldberg is I'd like to know what your plan is to better this situation, to help these kids with dyslexia and other special needs, since this month is the month of dyslexia, and I saw nothing in the agenda to deal with these dyslexia needs. Thank you.
Okay, I don't know if I got out of the translation or not. Am I back? Okay. I didn't hear all of it because I forgot to switch into English, and Ms. Ortiz, my Spanish is getting better, but you speak fluently and fast, and I didn't get all of it. But I think basically what you're trying to say is, how are we going to deal with the various issues like dyslexia, which is very important, and I do know this is Dyslexia Month. I believe that many of the community of schools administrators, community of schools have special ed folks who are dealing with this in literally group of schools by schools about dyslexia. But I don't know that for sure, so since I'm taking notes, I'm going to put that down. In the meeting that is coming up, the reason you don't see anything about this or much of anything else is that it's basically a hearing for charters who are trying to renew their charters. Though you guys will get 7 minutes at it, because it's a committee of the whole. However, having said that, we're not going to be taking up much of anything until the November meetings, and then we will be taking up a lot of this material. However, that doesn't mean that nobody's doing anything about it, but it's being done in a decentralized fashion through the community of schools, each of whom have someone who are working on special ed, including dyslexia. So I would try them and your school principal if you're not feeling like you're getting the help you need. And you're a board District 5 parent, give me a call or an email and we'll see if we can help. These are very difficult times, and they are especially difficult for special education students. There is no doubt about that. My grandson is in special ed. He is struggling with being online, but we're working as hard as we can to help him. I know that so many kids with special needs are struggling.
Thank you, Ms. Goldberg. We have a question from Rosa Villegas. It's a little, it seems similar to the question Mr. Peterson posed about PIIs, but
yeah.
Ms. Villegas, would you like to comment or ask the question? Ms. Villegas?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. My question was, my son has a BII.
Yep.
He has problems.
Yep.
But the BIIs are not able to come home.
Right.
Therefore, it's in a very difficult time for my family because I had just recently got a job.
Oh.
And I can't work because I don't have anybody to stay here with my son. So that becomes a big issue. And I know I'm not the only parent. There is other parents they're in the same situation.
Yes, you're right. And I don't know if you heard me with Mr. Peterson, yes. But basically yes. What we're trying to do is to figure out how to do the testing so that you're safe to the BII and the BII is safe to your family. And yes. As soon as that gets worked out, it's going to be available to everybody. I am talking to the superintendent about it. He knows it's a problem. He is working with the folks doing our testing, but it has to be a little different because we have to be able to track if there's an outbreak between the family and the BII, and we haven't got a protocol for that yet. That's as soon as that protocol is done, since we have so many testing sites, we can have BIIs and students and their families tested. Since they're going into the home, it's going to have to be everybody who's going to be there, not just the student who will have to get tested. Okay, I'm trying to make that happen as fast as possible, but you know, there are just so many things that we're working on at the same time that it's the protocols have to be correct before we do them, because otherwise people get sick and we're not going to let people get sick. So just hold on a little longer. We're working on that one.
Can I ask you another question?
Absolutely. I'm sorry.
No, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I'll put it in the chat.
I'm sorry, just we'll try to come back to you, Ms. Villegas, okay. And we put it in the chat.
I will, sorry.
Our next question was from member Mia Morano.
Unmute.
Yes, good afternoon, Ms. Goldberg, and thank you for joining us.
Happy to do so.
I was wondering, has the district contacted parents of students with IEPs to find out if they're getting the services per their IEP, if the students have been able to access the services, if the delivery of the service is effective, and if their child is progressing and regressing, or regressing, my apologies. Essentially, we receive communication every week via text, email, and phone call, but we rarely ever get anything that's dedicated just to us parents with students with IEPs that seeks to find out how we're doing, or if our student is getting the services, able to access the services. So I was just wondering if that has happened or if-
Has not happened. Could maybe happen, but I think there's probably a better way to do this. And that is, I think it would be better for us to do this through either local districts or community of schools. Because when the district sends something out to all the IEP parents and we get a response, we don't really know what to do with it. It's too many people responding to one location. So let me take that up with the superintendent. The whole question of how we get better feedback from parents is really a big one.
The problem.
Go ahead.
If the family is not receiving services and has tried to advocate at their school or locally, then actually it's better if it comes from the district than if they haven't been able to receive it from the school and they've already.
Okay. The problem is that most people have not tried, not most people, many people have not tried the folks closest to them who would have the most immediate help. Particularly if it's technological, you know, you can't get on, you can't stay on, it's blowing out, you know. But I will, it's on my list. I will figure out how to see whether it's better through a decentralized way or whether or not it is, whether it is better to do it from the district. But specifically to IEP parents, I think it's a good suggestion. I will bring it up in my meeting with the superintendent tomorrow.
We have a question. Oh, Mr. I just want to say I missed a Mr. Newman by mistake, so we have to go to him next. But Mr. Tolge, were you going to say something?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Ms. Morano, and thank you, Board Member Goldberg, for responding. We are in the midst of also planning out an engagement opportunity for our parents with students with disabilities to be rolled out by local districts. So we're planning to hold those in November and December. And hopefully with the CAC participation in that piece, we want to, again, hold two local district meetings per LD to hear from parents specifically around the things that have been working and things that have not been working. We also are planning to meet with our set up our principals so they can have meetings with their parents and coffee with the principals to specifically talk about our students with disabilities and receive input from them as well. Also, there's a three-prong approach to this that I wanted to share in our updates, but I just wanted to kind of interject there as a question got brought up. So, but we are planning an engagement opportunity for parents of student disabilities in November and December throughout the districts and throughout the LD. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Mr. Tolch. Our next question is for Mr. Newman, or from Mr. Newman.
I guess the question that I had asked, which was just right now with the schools being closed, a lot of people want to know, like, why, for how much long, not how much longer, but what is it, what are the steps, what is the district's official reason and the county's reason right now that it is closed? Is it because, you know, just the health concerns and the way that, yes, and the county stipulations, yes, yes, or is it because of union issues?
No, the union and the district are really not even negotiating. They're working together collaboratively to figure out the best hybrid plan. We've hit no stumbling blocks with any of the unions, not with the classified or the certificated on this, because everybody wants to go back to school. So what we're working out is how to do this the most safely. Elementary is easy, relatively speaking. High school and middle school, really tough. And here's why, because a single kid may be in six classes with five different groups of kids, which means that if that one kid were to get sick, that one kid could be infecting five different groups of kids. So it means our grouping of kids into pods, like we can do so easily in elementary, is a lot more complicated to figure out. However, nothing is holding us up of any things that we can do at the district level. We have already been adding the water hand washing stations. We've already been moving desks around. We're already sanitizing every inch of surface in every school every day. We are already putting the lines down on the pavement of which way to walk and have different entrances at middle and high school for different grades. We are already trying to figure out how we're going to have enough space in co-located schools with charter schools. If the school is using every room right now, what the heck do you do when you have to have smaller class sizes? So all that's going on right now. We are also, parents have already, of young children, elementary school age children, have already received requests for them to have their children tested so that we can get a baseline. If the state were to say you've met the criteria for opening in 3 weeks from now, because that's the big issue. We have to wait 3 weeks when we are not on purple, but we are on red. And right now we are on purple. Why are we on purple? It's the number of new cases daily. The deaths in LA County are way down. The hospitalizations in LA County are way down. The number of tests we're giving each day is not quite enough for the state, but it's very close. The actual only problem is if we can reduce the number of new cases per week, we will, and we can do that for 3 weeks, we can open up. So let's say that next week we get an okay. That means that in the beginning of December, probably, we could open up and the district would be ready. So it's not us that's going to hold things up. We are moving, really. People are working 7 day weeks. I'm not kidding. This is no exaggeration. And 10 and 12 hour days. So that the moment they say we can open up in a hybrid plan, we have the plan. We have all of the unions have agreed on what that plan is and their role. We have a plan for those students whose parents do not want to send them, so that there will be an online continuation all the way through the entire school year. And we will have a way for those who want to have students on come in person to do so. We are also working with all the 27 cities that LA Unified covers about locations in parks and recreation centers and so forth for after school, because we know that working parents can't pick up their kids at 2:30. We're not gonna have them do that. That is a piece that is not done, I have to say. The other pieces are mostly done. That piece is not done. But we are working very hard to get that piece done. But I think my If I were a betting person, I would bet second semester will be ready to go after the winter break. Now, that's not because I have any idea how we lower the number of people who have new cases. I mean, if people take seriously masks and distancing, if they take that very seriously and we reduce those numbers of cases, 3 weeks later, we're open.
Thank you, Ms. Goldberg. We're running low on time. I'm going to offer it to one more member. Mr. Ruiz was next, and then we'll have to wrap up questions. But if anyone wasn't able to ask a question, please put in the chat, and perhaps
and actually, we can send if you it to then send them. And actually, Lisa, if after they do that, if you send them to my email, I'll make sure that we take a look at them when I talk to the superintendent about what I heard at this meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Goldberg. This is Raul Ruiz. My question is, what is the plan for the LAUSD to address the situation with English learners who are also, you know, students with disabilities?
Well, theoretically, we already have a plan, and that is to make sure that the special education aids and the special education teachers are bilingual, so that they are able to support the student both in their language and in their disability needs, overcoming those disability needs. I do not know that it is in place everywhere. I do not know that we were able to have enough aides and teachers who were bilingual and special ed. I don't know that. So I'm going to write down that I need to get you that information, and I'll send it to your chair once I get it.
Great.
Because I don't really know. I know that's what's supposed to happen. I don't know if it's happening.
Right. And I appreciate that. You know, my son went through from elementary all the way through high school as an English learner. Mind you, that the only thing that he knew in Spanish was yes, because he wanted to eat. You want to eat? Yes, sí. So it was concerning that there were other parents with the same situation inside him. Thank God my son graduated from high school, and he's currently in Cal State LA. It's his second, he's going in his third year, and he's doing relatively well.
That's
but I'm
awesome.
Concerned about other parents in the situation.
It's a real problem. It's a real problem. It's not a small problem. It's a real problem. But I do know that there is an ongoing effort to address it. What I don't know is how successful it's been. So I'll make that inquiry, and I'll make sure that we tell Ms. Mosco what we found out so she can get it back to you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for being with us.
I'm happy to do so.
Thank you for joining us, Ms. Goldberg, and we look forward to continued dialogue with you.
All right, so let me tell you what I'm taking away from this. I'm going to work on BIIs getting into the home, finishing the protocols and making it happen. I'm going to work on making sure that we address dyslexia and other issues at our regular meetings. I've offered you 7 minutes at the beginning of a committee of the whole, and I'm going to see what we can do about surveying IEP parents about what's going well and what is not going well in terms of services being provided. And particularly for Mr. Ruiz, but anybody else who's interested, I'm going to find out how bilingual and special education are working together and whether what we plan to do is actually happening. Because, you know, that's one of the hard things with everything you do is you can make plans, but sometimes implementation is less than as good as the plan is. So that's partly what we got to keep working on. And it is what my office staff spends a lot of time on, is that they work very closely on trying to find out, are we doing what we're saying we are doing? So thank you so much for inviting me, but mostly I'll end where I started. Thank you for being willing to be on this committee. I know that the draws on your time during the pandemic must be enormous, and yet here all of you are. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. We'll be in touch. Bye. So now I will hand it over to the Division of Special Education. I don't think I gave them the welcome that they deserve. So everyone, please welcome Mr. Marco Tolge, Ms. Lilia Moran, Ms. Latanya Tolan, from the Division of Special Education, and they will be giving us their update.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you again for having us. And we always look forward to these meetings because they're productive. We always look to ensure that we're listening to our parents. So this is definitely a meeting, a Zoom meeting that I definitely look forward to. And I wanted to thank Board Member Goldberg for sharing her time with us. And I see the questions that were brought up, so I'll kind of do my best to address them in my little update here. Now, the update that we sent over in the beginning of October has changed a little bit. So I will add to this update because, as you know, and as Board Member Goldberg mentioned, things are changing daily with this pandemic, right? And so we do have a little bit more updates to share. So I want to definitely get to them. But when we talked about, created the update for this month, we wanted to start with the IEPs that we've had. So as of October 9th, we had around 12,758 IEPs across the board. Now I know Board Member Goldberg mentioned that they're having in-person IEPs. I have yet to see that. And so I definitely want to connect with her to make sure that, you know, where the information is coming from. But all of the IEPs that I'm aware of have taken place virtually. Now, I know Mrs. Ortiz has some concerns about the assessments that are involved in some of these IEPs. So the IEPs that have taken place right now are really the annual IEPs that have come up, right, that aren't requiring formal assessments, right? And so throughout the year, we have about 120,000 IEPs. Three quarter of those are just standard annual IEPs that don't require formal assessments. Now, with that being said, we are right now planning on in-person assessments, right? As you can imagine, we are a little bit behind in some of our IEPs, right? In terms of the overdue status. And a lot of it has to do with not being able to assess kids. Initials, for example, 3 years. And so right now what we're doing is gathering that data that we have and then also surveying our staff, our assessors available, so we can start to implement those in-person services, right? There are also various IEPs that are coming up that would require that all require review of records, kind of an evaluation process. And so with the IEPs that are coming up that are in that nature, where there's changes don't seem to be evident, right? That they're kind of, students are gonna receive the same services, we'll be able to proceed with that, but parents will receive a letter with that assessment plan that they have to sign that explains that process, right? So we are moving in a way to address some of the outstanding IEPs, but right now the IEPs that we have, that the 12,000 that we had are pretty much the annual IEPs, right? And so the teachers and the IEP teams are taking data from their current situation, evaluations as best as they can possible to come up with and record everybody's inputs to come up with the best support and services for that child. So again, 12,000 IEPs or close to 13,000 IEPs as of a couple weeks ago. We are definitely trending towards a direction where we're having more and more IEPs happen. The CDE has really charged LEAs to come up with a 20% a month kind of to tap into the overdue IEPs, right? So normally we have a snapshot rate of like 1.5% to 2% overdue IEPs. Right now we're at about 8%, right? So what the CDE has charged us to do is to really start to take chip away at that number by having a goal of knocking the overdue rate by 20% each time. So, you know, we're definitely taking a look at that piece and seeing how we can organize staff systemically to address those IEPs. But right now we continue to have text message reminders for parents when IEPs are coming. So if you have an IEP coming up and you're in our system, you should be receiving a text, robocall text to remind folks. And so we've been having some success on that piece. So that's kind of a mouthful for the IEP update, right? Again, we are working on devising a plan for in-person assessments. We're taking an inventory on what assessors would be willing to voluntarily come in to assess students one-on-one. Obviously, everybody would have to go through the testing piece, right? And go through our district website to sign up for a test for COVID, right? Now, the question was brought up around the 10%. The county had in the beginning of September, issued a statement that says LEAs may open their schools for 10% of their student population as long as their students with disabilities, foster youth, and EL, right? And so we have plans ready to go, but our superintendent is really steadfast on making sure that all of our kids and communities are safe, and then the testing piece is fully functional. So, you know, when we get the okay from Superintendent Buettner to go ahead and provide these services to the 10% piece, we will definitely go ahead and do that. Right now, that is not something that we are allowed to do based upon superintendent's direction, right? So again, the minute we have the green light to open our doors for the 10% piece, we will definitely do that. We have plans in place to have that executed, right? Various schools have various percentages of students. So there is, you know, for example, our CTCs, right? And our SPED centers, they're 100% students with disabilities. So some of them have 200 kids there, right? So that means a 10% max is only 20 kids. How do we pick the 20 kids that need to come in for that in-person services? So we're going to have to think about a rotating basis and things of that nature. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to this piece. So I just kind of wanted to share our thinking behind that. And I know that was a big concern because there, you know, that order that came out from the county health that said LEAs may, support kiddos in that classification. So I hope that answered the question. I know it's not an answer that we want to hear, right? But again, we're working on surveying our assessors to come back to school so they can provide those in-person assessments. Because that's a big piece that we need to address. I mentioned before, and I'm getting away from the report, but I mentioned before the engagement opportunities that we want to have for November and December in each of the local districts. So we're putting forth a plan to be approved by PCS and Division of Special Ed, and obviously the superintendent. And again, we want to have these engagement sessions at each of the local districts where we're receiving input from parents, and we're just breaking out into rooms and asking folks to give us their thoughts on how things are working, right? The local plan committee is going to meet on November 4th. I will be sending out an invite for folks, right? So that is the subcommittee that will work on the development of the local plan and report back out.
What date was that?
November 4th.
Okay. November 4th, the day after Election Day.
Yeah, I know. It's tough, but you know, that's the date that we have. So if I go back to the actual report, there is one-on-one tutoring, right, happening. Our students with disability, this one-on-one tutoring is really developed by each school principal, and they work with their communities to develop a phase-in approach. So again, they're going to have the schools will have the systems in place to make sure that the COVID-19 protocols are in place, but the tutoring will be available to, it will be provided by general education teachers and special education teachers, right? So each school is kind of doing that one-on-one tutoring as they depend on their community. So it's community-based, right? That was one thing I wanted to mention. The Special Olympics Southern California, our adaptive PE teachers have teamed up with Special Olympics Southern California to participate in team wellness for students and families. This is really a time to make sure that we pay attention to the wellness of each of our kids, right? And so this is a pretty cool program that our folks in Adaptive PE have kind of partnered with. So there's a website link there that you can click onto, but it's really a solid program that really focuses on wellness. We talked a little bit about devices for students in our preschool program. So our our charge is to make sure that every kid, every child has a device. So right now, and I think this, because this report was written in on the 9th, right, or submitted on the 9th, we've exceeded that piece. So we should have all of our families in the preschool special education program would be notified of the dates and the pickups and the location of the distribution centers for all devices. So that being said, I wanted to mention that because I know that was a big thing that was we were hearing that our families of our early ed didn't have the technology. So the other piece is again, reminder of the student family handbook available on our website. And then the Division of Special Education parent web page or website continues to provide information in terms of supplemental resources. So please click on that. I know it's ever changing. So please look out for that piece. And then we also have a new website launched for November. This was really under the direction of Ms. Moran, who's on the call, really is geared towards really having it be parent and user friendly, right? So I know our previous website or our current website is super, super busy and it's easy to get lost in there because of the materials. So our team really, again, under the direction of Lilia Moran, really purged a lot of the information that was there. Is going to make it easier to read. It's ADA compliant, and so that information will be most updated. So we definitely encourage you to visit those pages. For example, our child find information will be front and center, right? Messages from different units will constantly be updated. And again, it just gives an easier access to folks around what we do and how to receive support. The last thing I wanted to include, I took this information down from the CDE website and really talks about State Superintendent Thurman really looking at, you know, World Mental Health Day, right? And so he really messages the point of, you know, given all that's happening, right, in our communities across the nation, the racial and social unrest, really it's about really making sure that we're taking care of each other, right, and really looking out for one another. So they definitely gave us a charge of really looking, making sure that social awareness is present. And so I know, for example, Health and Human Services has really spent some time really working with staff on how to, you know, make sure they're taking care of themselves, make sure so they can take care of our kiddos, right? And so we really focused on that piece as well. So it's really about, you know, looking out for one another. So I wanted to just include that in our update from the CDE, because I always want to include something from the CDE or SELPA piece. I'm looking at my notes here. And again, the local plan on the November 4th. Oh, one other thing that again, today we are applying for ADR grant, which is Alternative Dispute Resolution grant. And what that does is really, hopefully if we get approved, give us some funding on how to support our staff and our schools around implementing the ADR process. And ADR process is really geared to help communication between families and school sites when there is a disagreement. So it's a little bit similar to our IDR, but we want to train individuals so they can come out as a third party to kind of hopefully just, you know, settle any disputes. And so we're going to pilot this ADR process in local district Northwest and West. And so our staff is getting ready for a big rollout training in November, I think November 16th, but our grant is due today. So we're sending an application in, and hopefully if we get granted the grant, we'll have some more money to make sure that we roll this out correctly. Again, this ADR process is intended to be the bridge when there is a dispute with at IEP teams, right? We really want to work with families to ensure that we are listening and we are coming to an agreement on how to best support their child. So this is something that is really on top of my mind. And so I directly oversee this, will directly be overseeing the rollout of this in local district Northwest and West. So I'm really looking forward to it. We have our staff in due process being trained, and then we're going to roll out training to the various staff. So we're really looking forward to a positive impact this is going to have on our due process piece. So those are all the big updates. And again, sorry for kind of veering away from the actual report, but in this COVID, world, things change constantly. So thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Tolton. Thank you for packing so much into your update. We are a little behind schedule now on our roll call vote. So with your patience, we are going to move to that item of the agenda. But again, thank you. I know that you're trying to give us as much information as possible in a short amount of time. So I'm going to give it to our secretary, Ms. Kim.
Thank you.
Ms. Yuen Kim.
Thank you. When I call your name, please unmute yourself and state whether you are here. Okay, I'll start roll call now. Amy Sovchek-Yi. Amy Sovchek-Yi.
And you can just say Amy Yi, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Angela Thudium. Anna Galvarez. Ariel Herman Holmes.
Here.
Brian Davis.
Brian Davis here.
Carl Peterson.
Carl Peterson here.
Karen Dubrow.
Yeah.
Clinton Frosch. Fedora J. Nick. Jeanette Godina.
Present.
John Perron.
Present.
Kelly Komen. Liana Asitran Pickup. Maria Daisy Ortiz. Myra Zamora.
Present.
Mia Morano.
Present.
Great, thank you. Patrick Bromark.
Present.
Raquel Diaz.
Presente.
Rosa, thank you. Rosa Villegas.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Shanita Williams. Sherry Johnson.
Present.
Thank you. Lisa Moscow.
Present.
Janith Gastelum.
Tanita Williams was here. I was trying to get in, but I couldn't unmute myself in time.
Thank you, Shanita Williams. Sorry, let me repeat the member's name. Janith Gastelum.
It's Janet, and I'm here.
Janet, great, thank you. Martin Sandoval. Martin, Martin Sandoval.
Here.
Thank you. Raul Ruiz.
Here, present.
Thank you. Anna Carrion. You and Kim, I'm here. Charlotte Henderson.
I'm here.
Sorry, who's here?
Miss Anna Carrion is here.
Miss Anna Carrion.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. It's hard to see which screen, to see both screens. Thank you, Anna. Charlotte Henderson, you're here, right?
Yes, present.
Thank you. Security Ray?
Present.
Thank you. Rocio Alorza?
Present. Present.
Alan Newman?
Present.
Andrea Yahudian? Andrea Yahudian? Right. That goes for members. Okay, I'm going to say the name of our alternate. So Leah Franklin?
Sorry, Ms. Kim?
Oh, sorry.
Did you hear Daisy Maria Ortiz say she was present? Because I heard a little bit, but I just wanted to be sure that you registered her.
Can you say her the name one more time?
Daisy Ortiz. Or Maria?
Maria
Ortiz.
I have her present.
Okay.
Thank you. Solia Franklin, are you here? Solia Franklin? Jolie Alvarado? Isabel Martinez?
Present.
Thank you. Emily Park? Elena Silva Barrera? Barrera? Jose Reyes de Leon? Jose Reyes de Leon?
Yeah.
We have met quorum. We have 24 members present, 2 alternates present, and Isabel can be seated, who is an alternate, and she will be an alternate for Angela Thudium. Okay, so I'm gonna put that. So Isabel,
can you call Kelly name one more time? I believe she was one of the ones on the telephone earlier. Just Kelly so we Coleman. Don't miss her. Yes, thank you.
Kelly Coleman, are you here? Kelly? Okay. Isabel Martinez, you'll serve an alternate for member Angela Thudium. I believe two students who are members are both here today. Jose, I don't think you can serve as an alternate at this time. Oh, sorry, you can't substitute for a member at this time. Great. So we have met quorum with 24 members present.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. And now we will take it to the minutes. Approval of minutes from our September 16th meeting. And Ms. Zamora, I'm going to ask Ms. Zamora to comment on the minutes. She had something to say.
So I just wanted to clarify, since we, you know, request that there be corrections or additions or deletions being made, that if any of those need to be done, if you can post that on the chat just for the sake of time so that we can, you know, make a motion. And if there's anything that needs to be done, then we'll post that in the chat so that we can forward those revisions or corrections that need to be done to those minutes at a later meeting. So that will probably be at the next one once those things have been compiled.
Can I ask a point of clarification on that? Which is my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, so I'm really just asking, would we make that statement about the that Ms. Zamora was just talking about the correction stuff, isn't that supposed to be just in relation to like word choice and grammatical error and things like and spelling, not anything to do with substantive things like, I don't know, something passed or didn't, like if there's an actual thing that changes the meaning of the minutes, that those things have to be laid out separately? And that statement is more just about more grammatical types of things and stuff, because we used to spend 20 minutes going over how, if this word was spelled right or if a comma belonged here or there. So that was one thing where I just always thought that that's what we were talking about and not anything of substance with that. So could that just be clarified?
I believe, and you know, I will defer to our parliamentarian if she has any further comment on this, but I agree, Mr. Newman, it's not about substantive. It's not about changing content. It's about sort of more clerical errors, if you will. That said, if we spend all the time that would be needed to go over the minutes at our meetings, and we wouldn't be able to get really crucial updates from the Division of SPED or a presentation on significant disproportionality. And I would also say that what we should do, to your point, is devise a protocol so that we can review if there have been any corrections made. And then obviously at future meetings, we can address that, put it on the agenda, and actually address it if there has been corrections made that are just beyond the typo correction, if you will. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been concerned like there's going to be like changes of meaning or anything, but that was something that was, right? I'm like, no, I think it's just talking about, you know, these everyday grammatical writing types of things. So I think we're all on the same page then.
Madam Chair, this is Mr. Perrin. If I may suggest that if there is anything that rises to the level of changing the context or the meaning, that be addressed as an actual motion, and that's enough right there.
Exactly.
Okay, so now we will assign 2 minutes to review the minutes, and then we will put it to a vote for their approval with any necessary additions, deletions, or corrections.
Will we have a screen share during those 2 minutes?
May we? Do we have them prepared, Dr. Dixon, for screen share?
Okay, let me check on that.
Also, and they should have arrived in your email inbox.
Correct.
So if you want to, in the meantime, take a look at your, if you have access to your email, take a look.
Okay, I'm still working on that. Bear with me.
We do have the screen share working.
Okay, thank you. I hope everyone had time to review the minutes. I know usually we have a little bit more time in advance of our meeting to review our minutes, and that's something we're working on. But I think that a valid point has been made about adjusting the language around the motion. Usually our motion is I move to accept the minutes with any necessary corrections, deletions, or additions, but perhaps what we can do is create, and I'm not proposing, I'm not moving. I'm talking about the language around the motion, but perhaps we can say something to the effect of, I move to accept the minutes with any necessary corrections, deletions, and additions. Oh, I apologize. I put on the chat in a really convoluted way. To address only clerical and grammatical errors and affect only non-substantive changes. Does that make sense? Addressing grammar, I got a thumbs up from Carl Peterson, thank you, Ms. Mia Morano. So addressing grammar, addressing clerical, because sometimes it's like, oh, we didn't start at 101, we started at 102. Or maybe we forgot the name of an important individual. So that's clerical issues, grammatical issues, and then non-substantive changes, meaning not changing the content. Okay. Would anyone like to entertain a motion to accept the minutes?
I'll make a motion to accept.
Okay, so you need to say what your motion is.
And I make a motion to accept the minutes. I'm looking for the wording here.
Yes. Senora Carrion, we're waiting for him to move, and then you can second it.
I move to accept the minutes with the ability to correct the minutes for any necessary corrections, deletions, and additions to address grammatical errors and affect only non-substantive changes.
Okay, do we have a second? Ms. Carrion is seconding the motion. You say I second it. Can you say it? Ms. Carrion, are you seconding the motion?
Okay, estaba esperando que terminara la persona de la
moción. I was waiting for him to make his motion. Hi, Ana Carrion, make a second motion to accept these with the additional corrections necessary or needed.
And now we will take it to a roll call vote. So, Ms. Kim, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
When I call your name, please unmute yourself and say loud and clear whether or not you vote yes, no, or abstain. Great. I'll start. Amy Soszek E. Same. Isabel Martinez.
Yes.
Anna Galvarez.
Yes.
Brian Davis.
No.
Okay. Carl Peterson.
Yes.
Sharon Dobro.
Yes.
Jeanette Godina.
Yes.
John Perro.
Yes.
Maria Daisy Ortiz.
Present. Sí.
Yes.
Myra Zamora.
Yes.
Mia Morano. Start. Something.
That's cool. And this is Hacker. Everybody needs to mute yourselves, please. Are being heard. Five.
Thank you. Mia Morano?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Patrick Bormark?
Yes. Yes.
Right, thank you. Raquel Diaz?
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Rosa Villegas?
Abstain,
thank you. Shalita Williams? Sherry Johnson?
Yes.
Sherry, is that you?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Lisa Mosco?
Yes.
Janet Gastelum?
Yeah.
Martin Sandoval?
Yes.
Okay. Raul Ruiz?
Yes.
Anna Carrion?
Yes.
You and Kim? Yes. Charlotte Henderson? Security Ray?
Yes.
Rosia Alorza?
Sí.
Alan Newman?
Abstain.
Okay. Did I miss anybody who is a member and who can vote? Okay. So the total tally is 21 members said yes, voted for yes, 1 said no, and 2 have abstained. The motion passes.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. And yeah, we will keep working on streamlining this process. I understand the issues. We're trying to figure it out on the fly, but yes, it will certainly be addressed at our next officers meeting. I appreciate your patience with this. So now we will welcome Mr. Antonio Plasencia. He's been here the whole time, but thank you. We're newly welcoming him to present the Parent Community Services update.
Good afternoon, and can you see the Spanish and the English files here for your view? Just to double check with everyone.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Buenas tardes a todos. We appreciate you for being here with us today. We know that this commitment is one that takes up a lot of space in your day, so we're just very grateful. I want to highlight this month from the Office of Parent and Community Services. We know that we have been speaking to you about the concept of communities of schools. And I know that in the chat, there were questions around how communities of schools are coordinating supports that directly assist families, whether it be with an IEP, whether it be around the area of family engagement, or possibly like an affirmation, a congratulations you would like to communicate to the local district of what exceptional practices our schools are doing, or if you might have a parent sort of just a concern or an issue with the school site. So I wanted to introduce this month the concept of community of schools. For those of you that might be new parent leaders in our school district, as you're learning more about the Los Angeles Unified, I wanted to bring your attention to the fact that this year is the first year where we transition over into continuing with our local districts. And on the screen and in your email, you'll see from Dr. Dixon that I included a link for each of you that takes you to each of our local district offices. Just to orient you around the local districts, if you note that you have South, which covers South LA, the Watts area going down towards you'll also see that in local district East, this covers East LA, our wonderful Southeast cities, and portions of Boyle Heights and El Sereno. Local District Northwest, you're essentially looking at what is west of the Monroe High School area, of a few portions of Local District Northeast, but a few schools that are within sort of like maybe east of the 405, but essentially those that are from the 405 westbound. Northeast, you're looking at Sylmar, San Fernando, Pacoima, Sun Valley, Panorama, Van Nuys. West, you're looking at schools west of I think Manual Arts is sort of like the border, but it includes areas of from Washington Hawkins on the south end up to Dorsey, Hamilton, Crenshaw, towards the west side, and to portions of around West Hollywood. And so each of these local districts have organized themselves into communities of schools, meaning that you are within a smaller group of schools and there is a team that directly serves the needs of your community. So I'll give you an example. The El Sereno Lincoln High sort of a community of schools has its own what is called the community of school administrator. They have their instructional support teams around ELA, math support, in some instances they have a designated parent educator coach. But these are groupings by neighborhood school because Superintendent Buettner, since he started his superintendency, has focused on directing services and supports from downtown and decentralizing those and getting those closest to our school communities. So within each of these web pages, I put these available for you here. You're able to go to each of your local districts and you'll be able to see who your community of school administrator is. And that is a supervisor that oversees that grouping of schools. So if there's a particular challenge or inquiry that you have, please contact that community of school administrator. I know they're very responsive and they'll be able to coordinate and assist you with whatever specific concerns you may have. So I wanted to bring that to you and really highlight those web links. Please take some time after this meeting or even as you are navigating to it to become familiar. This is last year we piloted with two local districts. I'm a parent in one of the local districts on the east side that went through this experience. And we're continuing to refine the model. We know that you all have been asking for greater forms of two-way engagement. And as Mr. Tolch highlighted earlier today, we're gonna be discussing and we're exploring what that will look like within this new sort of organization of structure. Nonetheless, I want you to know that each of these local districts do have a superintendent. I also wanted to highlight, I know last week we brought you some PCS updates. Wanna make sure that I am changing those and providing you updated documents, and I'm also checking my time. I know that I'm limited on time, but I wanted to provide to you here the various key updates from PCS, letting you know that our hotline is still up to date. We continue to monitor the data, and we are very excited that our wait time is 0 minutes. So any questions you might have regarding anxiety, stress management, if you need to talk to just someone around just how you're feeling about COVID-19, have questions about Parent Portal. If you need your Schoology, your student ID number to help maybe schedule COVID-19 testing or general needs, call us. We're a one-stop shop. We're really about offering consultations. We train our staff every week because we want to know that if there's a service or a question that can't get addressed at your school site, know that we're here at the 1300 line. Also want to let you know that we know we have many of you that are part of our parent organizations, PTA, PTO, and booster clubs. We continue to connect with the 10th and 31st District PTA to offer assistance so that fundraisers can continue, obviously, following LA County Public Health. Parent and community volunteers, we know that physical volunteer opportunities are still not approved by LA County Public Health, but there are many assets that our parents bring to our schools. So we have adapted our policy so that if you want to complete your volunteer form and you want to be doing some maybe assistance, like helping with, you know, the coffee with the principal or other pieces at your school site, you're able to do so. You know, we're also continuing, we are in the mode of school site council trainings. contact your local district office or contact us at PCS and check our calendar. We started our school site council trainings by local district with local district Northwest and Northeast, and we'll be cycling through November to offer those school site council trainings. One thing we learned is that parents and even school staff have said, we want to learn more about parliamentarian procedures. So do know that in the month of November, we're going to be offering support to a class to go deeper into parliamentarian procedures as members of our three committees. And we're going to be exploring what it looks like for us to continue offering additional support around the composition, role of SSC and our ELAC and parliamentarian procedures as well for our parents at our school sites at large. Last but not least, I want to highlight and let you know that you have been receiving communications from our superintendent about COVID-19 testing. This was referenced by Board Member Goldberg in regards to how we're able to return back to school. You can go and to the website, which I have included for you here. There are two websites that show you a video highlighting the testing process. And want to let you know that our students are currently able to begin testing as necessary. So those are some key highlights that I wanted to offer you. Again, want to wrap up with, we have a webpage where we offer various resources from Metro Public Transportation, you know, California Employment, Unemployment and Development Department, LA Food Bank, how students can get tutoring through the Los Angeles Public Library, and many others. These are on our COVID PCS website, but for this one, we wanted to make sure that these hyperlinks were available for you here. And so with that, thank you, Madam Chair. Any questions you might entertain, or please advise how we might proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Plasencia. Very impressive that you have zero wait time. Congratulations on that.
And may I wrap up with one final item, which I think is very important for all of you in this committee and as well?
Yes.
I want to let you know, just a reminder, that for these meetings, and specifically as we think about in our trainings and that are specific to the work of the CAC, we want to remind you, if you have a child that's under the 13 years or under, or if you have a student with an IEP, please email us at families. The email is families@lausd.net, and I'll ask my colleagues at PCS to please type it in the chat. But please include families@lausd.net. And I'm also going to be including for you here, if you need to email us directly in any sort of point in time, I'm going to include for you our PCS website where you can find the email information for our team. But we do offer childcare reimbursement. So please email us if you have children 13 and under. And if you have a student with an IEP, you're also, we'll discuss these items with you one-on-one, but please email us and we'll develop our list so that we can provide you the forms. We will mail these to you, have you sign them. We'll process those, give you a self-addressed return envelope to provide you the reimbursements. I have that note on there for my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Plasencia. We are behind on time. So I would encourage anyone with any questions to put them in the chat, if you don't mind. And then we will move straight to the presentation that the Division of Special Ed has prepared for us on the significant disproportionality plan that LAUSD is devising in time for the deadline in December. So Mr. Tolch, would you like to take it away?
Yeah, thank you again, Ms. Moskow, so appreciate it. I am going to introduce Adrian Boyd, who is going to share our presentation around significant disproportionality. Like Ms. Moskow mentioned, our report or our plan is due on December 20th. So we're right in the midst of developing a plan that Ms. Boyd will kind of review with you. We did do a little deeper dive in some data, so we'll have a discussion around the key data points for our work. So with that being said, Dr. Aaron Jeffrey couldn't make it today, so he extends his apologies, but Adrian Boyd is definitely gonna take us through it, and I'll be able to chime in around the data piece just to kind of bring some clarity to it. So without further ado, I'm gonna turn it over to Adrian Boyd. Thank you, Ms. Boyd, for your participation today.
Pleasure. Good afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Adrienne Boyd, and I'm a coordinator with the Division of Special Education. And this afternoon, I'll be providing an overview and an update of the division's work with the CDE to address disproportionality. Next slide, please. So I know that most of you are aware that the CDE found LAUSD to be significantly disproportionate in two areas. In the number of African-American students with disabilities suspended or expelled, and disproportionate in the number of African-American students found to be eligible for special education services in the category of emotional disturbance, or ED. So what we'll do now is take a look at some of the data that reflects what the CDE found. So this data from 2019-20 shows the total student enrollment by ethnicity, and of that, the enrollment for students with disabilities. So we see that although African-American students make up just 7.6% of the total student population, about 30,000 students, 10% of those students are identified as students with disabilities. Now, what we would expect is that the number of students with disabilities to be less than the percentage of all students shown, of all students, such as that's shown in the data for Hispanic students, where we see that the percentage of students with disabilities is actually less than the total population. Note that it's also higher for white students as well, and much lower for Asian students. So the disproportionality definitely affects African-American students, and it also is affecting white students as well. Next slide. Sorry. So this data focuses on students with disabilities and provides a snapshot of single student suspensions by ethnicity for school years 2017, which is in blue, 2018 in orange, 2019 in gray, and 2020 in yellow. So the good news is that there is an overall trend in the reduction of suspensions for all students, but African-American students are still overrepresented in this number. The goal for LAUSD that the CDE wants to see is that the suspension rate for African-American students not exceed 3%. Next slide. So here we see the percentage of students identified under 11 eligibility categories. And notice that African-American students are more likely to be found eligible under the categories of emotional disturbance at 18.5% and other health impairment at about the same, around 18.5%. So together, you know, we have almost 36% of students, African-American students, found eligible under these two categories. Typically, we see with other health impairment, our students who may come in with a medical diagnosis of like ADD or ADHD. And so in those cases, there may be challenges with attention or challenges with behavior. And so that's typically students who fall under the other health impairment category, just to clarify. Next slide. So this data provides a view of suspensions by eligibility, and it includes all ethnic groups. So as you see, the highest number of suspensions occurs for students identified under other health impairment, or OHI. And this is also the eligibility category in which we find a higher number of African-American students as compared to other ethnic groups. And there too, we have emotional disturbance, which is also represented. So the top three being other health impairments, specific learning disability, and emotional disturbance. Next slide. Thank you. So next we see the suspension data for students with disabilities divided by local district. So again, you'll notice that there is a downward trend in the number of suspensions for students with disabilities between 2017 and 2020 in all local districts. So this represents all students with disabilities in all ethnic groups. So it's really nice that we see a downward trend, meaning that, you know, we are especially, you know, in 2019-20, of course, we did, you know, have the pandemic, so that will, you know, impact the numbers. But overall, just trying to implement strategies at the schools to that are alternatives to suspension. So it definitely shows in the data. Next slide, please. Now, this data breaks it down specifically for African American students with disabilities. Note that local District West has the highest African American student population. And while there has been a reduction in the suspensions for African American students, suspensions for African American students still represent like more than 50% of the total number of suspensions for students with disabilities, and that's in each school year. So, for example, if we look under Local District West, this is the far left, we see that for 1920, there were 60 single student suspensions for African American students with disabilities. And I don't know if you can go back to the previous slide, jump back to the previous slide. And if we see Local District West, for all students with disabilities, there were 109 single suspensions. So of that 109, African American students accounted for 60. So that's over half. And so if we look at the data, we see that that is, in Local District West, the case in every school year. So even though there's a downward trend, African American students with disabilities are still representing more than half of the overall students suspended, students with disabilities who are suspended. Okay. Next slide. So this final slide, we see that data that represents the percentage of enrollment of African American students in each local district for the 2019-2020 school year. And note that across all local districts, African American students are overrepresented in special education. So, you know, when we look compared to the number of African American students in general education not receiving special education services, which is represented in the orange bar, then when the gray bar represents the students who are receiving special education students, we see that across local districts, they're overrepresented.
Yeah, Adrian, if I can interject here, this is, okay. You know, as we're finding out when we dive into our data, we're looking at LD South and LD West being the primary source of our, not the primary source, but the when you look at the data, that's where our suspensions are coming from, right? And so I know there's a question in the chat about heat. And has their staff been aware, you know, have they brought it up to speed? And yes, they have. And so there's processes in place that we have to follow by the CDE, and we'll talk a little bit about that in phases. But right now, one of our primary responsibilities is to, and we've done this already, is really look at the different leaders in the different units and start asking the questions about procedures and policies, and really get a handle on everybody's understanding of those pieces, understanding on the placement procedures, understanding on, you know, the review of data. And so we're asking different leaders from different units, such as, you know, multilingual, multicultural. We're looking at health and human services, right? We're definitely going to dive into the local district staff of local South and West, because again, primarily the district is looked upon at a significant disproportion as a whole. But when you look at the specific areas, and the consultant that we're working with had asked us to kind of narrow down our district because we're so big. And through data, we noticed that, hey, we really got to look at the practices and the training available for the folks in local district South and local district West. Now, given that this is, we're in a new state, you know, new state right now in terms of, like, you know, suspensions, because right now the suspensions are non-existent, right? Because we're not in school. And so that makes it a little bit challenging, right? Because right now we went from X amount of suspensions to really nothing. And so that's not really a true indication that we're, that, hey, things are working, because we're in a different environment. So part of our charge, or part of our process, is to interview and collect or conduct focus groups with the various leaders in the different units. So, and we're reviewing the same exact data that we're sharing with you, so we can bring awareness to where some of those root causes, what some of those root causes might be. So anyway, so I kind of wanted to chime in there too, because when you look at individual school sites, it's really hard to measure, because not a lot of schools suspend frequently, right? But we looked at the last 3 years and tried to take a look at what schools suspended, have a high suspension total for the last 3 years combined. Because when you start comparing school by school, it's not disproportionate. So when you add up everybody together and you compare that against the percentage, is when we're found to be disproportionate. So anyway, I just kind of wanted to share that piece with you.
Yeah, thanks, Marco. Next slide, please. So there are several activities that the CDE is requiring LAUSD to do to address and ultimately remedy the disproportionality. These requirements include setting aside 15% of special education allocations to directly address the disproportionality. The CDE is providing, and it's also mandatory, technical assistance that will support our district in the development of a coordinated early intervening service plan to address the disproportionality in the two areas identified, which were suspensions and the over-identification and the eligibility of ED. So the plan requires activities to address the needs of the identified group, African-American students, identify factors that cause the disproportionality, as Marco was just speaking about, and then specific actions that the district will be taking to resolve it. I don't know, do you want to add anything to that, Marco?
Yeah, one of the things that we are having in our conversations is trying to really identify what the root causes are. Why is this happening, right? Are folks' understanding of the policies and procedures in place? You know, we have a plentiful amount of policies and procedures, but are folks following with fidelity, right? And so that's where I think when we talk about some of the strategies and how to monitor this piece, is that we have to have continuous performance management kind of dialogues around the data to see where some gaps might be, right? Are we as a system looking at our pre-referral data, right? And our SSPT data before we start suspending students? Are there warning signs, or are there strategies that we can put in place for prevention piece before we suspend students? So, you know, the suspension piece has gone down district-wide over the years, but we haven't significantly decreased the suspensions of our African-American kiddos, which is a concern, right? And so we really ought to look at what training is available to folks, what practices like restorative justice, or is school-wide PBS being implemented with fidelity at each of the sites? And so, again, there are a lot of policies, procedures, and frameworks that we have published and that are out there, but really, how are we monitoring that piece? And I think that's one of the strategies that we're going to try to, you know, really hone in on for the next 3 years. You know, we have an opportunity to set aside a certain percentage of money that we haven't started on yet because it's due on the 20th and it has to be approved. But we really need to take this opportunity to really embed all of the work district-wide that we're focusing on in terms of the prevention piece. Like multi-tier systems of support is a avenue that we need to address as a district, and we need to continuously improve our practice around that piece, because that is what's are going to be our focus to address this issue. And so we really got to make sure that we're utilizing that 15% to its fullest. And so hence the meetings with the different folks. We did take a survey that we had everybody do individually, so that we can see if there's coherence in our understanding of the policies and procedures around our support for students with disabilities, African Americans, and suspension pieces. So that's going to be interesting to see what the data says around that piece. But that's part of the work that's involved in this phase of the information gathering. The mandatory technical assistance is that's where we're assigned, and we had to partner up with a consultant that would guide us through, really looking and writing a solid plan. But, you know, my concern is not so much the plan. I mean, the plan's going to be there. We're going to develop a robust plan that is data based and it's beneficial for all. But the implementation piece is something that we need to also embed in that plan, is how are we going to monitor to say that what we're doing is actually happening? And that comes from our data conversations. That's one activity that I feel needs to happen, which hasn't happened across the board around any kind of data. So, you know, it's definitely something that we need to be part of that needs to be part of.
Next slide, please.
UCLA, and I went, oh my God, what are you talking about?
So again, with regard to the technical assistance, the technical assistance providers are certified by the CDE, and like Marco said, they support the district with all aspects of developing the plan, and will be guiding us through the process. The district must choose from a list of approximately 14 certified technical assistance providers. I believe we have our providers, right?
Yes, we've selected that.
Okay, so they assist with all aspects of the development, the surveys, the choosing of the focus groups. So they're there to provide guidance for us as we go through the process. Next slide, please.
I just have to cut in. We had a question. I'm sorry I didn't see it until now. For our student, we need to explain, what is ED? Can we please explain that acronym?
Emotional disturbance. It's an eligibility category, a special education eligibility category.
Thank you.
There's a difference between eligibility category and program, though. I just wanted to make that distinction, right? There are 14, I believe, eligibilities that you can qualify for special education services. But in LA Unified, we also have what we call ED program, right? So there's two different things. And what we're found disproportionate out of is identifying African Americans with the ED eligibility, right? So it's not the ED program.
So with regard to teams, the process requires that the district establish three teams. So the leadership team assumes the responsibility of the program improvement process and is also responsible for the oversight of the plan. The stakeholder team is a team that includes parents, teachers, school leaders, or school administrators like principals, students, and support staff. And they contribute to the program improvement process efforts also. And the implementation team will oversee the rollout of the plan and monitor compliance measures. Next slide. So currently, there are four phases, and we are currently in phase two. At each phase, there are required activities. The leadership team has been established, and the stakeholder team is being established in consultation with the technical assistance provider to ensure that we have a cross-section of the population represented. Several meetings, focus meetings or focus group meetings, will be occurring throughout the process. They are currently happening now. Marco mentioned surveys also that have gone out, and the purpose of the surveys and the meetings are around determining the root cause of the disproportionality and also analyzing the data. So as he said, we have until December 2020, and so following that, there'll be ongoing implementation and monitoring for about a year. Next slide, please. So this is just a snapshot of what's been completed. Our LEA initiative inventory has been completed. We submitted 255 surveys. Again, those were around the district's policies, practices, and procedures related to preventing disproportionality and increasing equity. The district interview on policy and practice and the interview with the CDE basically covers what the district has done thus far to address the disproportionality and around a discussion of the next steps in the process. Marco, you want to add?
Yeah, I wanted to stress, the importance of stakeholder input. So the 255 folks that submitted a survey were various stakeholder groups across the district. And I can get a breakdown of that later on, but it did include parents, staff, teachers, paraprofessionals, and administrators. And I believe some students, but I got to definitely take a look at that piece. We did meet with our person who will review our plan from the CDE, where it said phase one and two interviewed with the CDE conducted. That happened 2 weeks ago. Monica Prokhorowicz is our person, and so she sat in on our presentation, and it was pretty much a lot of the slides we shared here. We talked about our approach with local districts South and West in terms of identifying and really focusing on those two LDs in terms of training and things of that nature. So we're definitely gearing up, developing a plan to work with those local districts, obviously for to benefit the entire district, but because of our data, we wanted to make sure that we address those LDs first. So, she was pretty good with our progress. So there's basically a check-in with her, and she gave us the thumbs up in terms of our progress so far. Again, December 20th is when it's due. They're gonna review, they're gonna come back to us. She said early or mid-February, with the approval or if there's something that need to be amended. But we're looking forward to figuring out where we can utilize those funds and how we can strategize with the Division of Instruction, Health and Human Services, and really gear our support in this area. Actually Board Member Goldberg alluded to it earlier, each COSA or each community of school has an LRE and a program specialist, right? But they also have various other support personnel from different content areas. Now, not each coast is similar. They don't have all the same support staff. But in our work, in our plan for this, for our SIGDISCs, and to really address this, we really got to work on collaborating with the different units, because this item alone is not a special education, responsibility. I think for the overall benefit of kids in our district, we need to come together as units to act as one. Yes, we're significantly disproportionate under students with disabilities that are African American, but when you look at the entire suspensions are, you know, we definitely need to take a look at the disproportionality for all kids. And I think, you know, us working together, trying to figure out what support personnel is needed in LD West and South to address this issue for the next 3 years is something that we need to really think through. Because, you know, when you talk about 15%, that's a lot of money. And we need to make sure that that money is put to use and we see results that will benefit our kiddos, right? Because we cannot have this continuous rate of suspensions. You know, when we dive into the data and people talk about non-public schools, but when we have under grade six, 50% of our kids in non-public school from LA Unified are African-American under grade six, that is not good. And so through the significant disproportionality data in our assignment here, we were able to look at those type of other data points that are concerning and alarming. Why are we placing kids in a non-public school under grade six and primarily African-American? That is something that we definitely have to address. And so those conversations are taking place so we can get to the root causes. IEP teams are placing kids in non-public schools, right? So why is that percentage so high? And so that is a big anchor that we need to look at in this work. And that came from just these conversations. And again, through data. Data drives us, right? And we need to make a culture that we're all constantly looking at data to figure out, you know, where is our direction going and how we can always improve. So anyway, that's kind of, sorry for kind of going down a different path, but, you know, the significant disproportionality plan has really made us think about other things and how we can systemically look at our support for kiddos, right? So sorry about that.
And if you don't mind, Mr. Tolt, holding off till we finish. I see we only have like one slide left anyway, right? And then questions?
Sorry.
No apologies necessary. Thank you.
Actually, that's a perfect segue because the last slide is questions.
That was amazing. Okay. So I hope you don't mind that if I go in a slightly different order. Yes, we have the rule where we prioritize our members, but I'd also like to keep rotating it so that different members get to ask questions. So right now I have in my notes that we have Mr. Newman, Mr. Peterson, and then Ms. Henderson. I hope you don't mind if I just jump straight to Ms. Henderson, and then we can circle back to members who've already asked questions before. So Ms. Henderson, you had a question?
Yes, I did. I just really, you know, we see the data that you presented, but I would just really like to know, like, and I know Mr. Tosh kind of went over, but not completely, but what are some of the reasons? Because they have had to have had some kind of reason for the CDC to even come up with those findings. So what are some of the reasons for the disproportionality with African-American students? Because, you know, therein lies the problem, you know, and this is evidently a systemic problem. So I would like to know, like, what are some of the reasons, you know, that they found, you know, that this issue, you know, has been occurring. It's been occurring for years.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Ms. Henderson, the state doesn't tell us, you know, what the problem is. They identify the problem. You know, they, through data, they're saying to us, you are suspending way too many kids that are African American, right? What again? We've been in that realm for quite some time. We have been decreasing our suspensions, right? That's evident in the data. But the state tells us there's a problem, LAUSD, you need to figure it out. They don't tell us how to figure it out, and that's up to us, right? And so when we talk about what might some of the problems be or what might some of the issues be, first and foremost, it's the lack of training for teachers and school site administrators on how to implement school-wide PBS with fidelity, right? How do you teach behavior, right? What are your expectations on it? So if that's not addressed at your school site as a whole, chances are there's going to be issues there, right? So there's a variety of different things that might be causing this. And so right now we're in the midst of identifying what those causes might be. That's why we're interviewing different staff members to ask them separately, hey, do you know of our policies and procedures around suspension. Do you know the policies and procedures around our placement and continuum of services? So those are the things that we're trying to find out now. And it starts with asking different folks in different levels of the work, right? So we're definitely starting up with the leadership piece. We're definitely going to ask our folks in the field, in those local areas, why might you be suspending kids? Why might one school have 15, you know, referrals a month for special ed while the school down the street might have two, right? And is it behavior related, right? So those are the things. We're seeing some inconsistencies in behavior expectations and how folks are how school sites are implementing those strategies. But that's part of our charge, is to find out what the problem is. But the state doesn't tell us. But thank you for the question.
If I could just chime in, like Marco said earlier, you know, although the CDE is focused on African American students with disabilities, this is a district issue too. So African American students with disabilities and without disabilities are suspended at higher rates. You know, LA Unified has, there's an advisory group, an African American advisory group that, you know, meets to discuss these issues also, issues around suspension and also issues around, you know, achievement for African American students. And one thing that they talk about is culturally responsive pedagogy, meaning, you know, are the teachers who are teaching the students, do they understand the community? Do they understand the culture and the different situations that students are in or where they come from? Because all of that, you know, makes up the student. And also, you know, helping schools identify that, and also, like Marco said, training with knowing how to address other challenges that come with the community and that may come with the student that are not just strictly, you know, educational, and how, you know, the community and, you know, life in general, you know, impacts student success, and, you know, how to look at that, you know, and not necessarily see it as a negative thing, or, you know, that student is being difficult, you know, but, you know, empathy, you know, also, and, you know, that the more you understand, you know, your student and who your student is, then maybe the mindset will also change with that. So this is definitely, like he said, even bigger than just special education.
I think we're going to go to the next question from Ms. Security Ray.
Can you hear me? Okay. Hi, thanks. I do apologize. Some of the questions were, some of my questions was answered, and I do agree that it is just a district problem and not a local problem, and it does have to do with the cultural environment where I have a grandson who has been, you know, suspended just for a dance move that is now a crave right now, simply because they said he was, what is that juking that they do? He was suspended for doing that dance, and they said he was sexually gyrating. And it's just, you know, for other students that may do it, they think that is cool. So I do believe that a lot of the African American children are suspended simply because they don't understand our culture. They don't understand what it is that we do, because there is a culture difference. I think not just having these focus groups go, and I do applaud the African American Advisory Committee, because that is what's needed. And a lot of teachers need to get with these focus groups. A lot of teachers need to go under, or we do have sociology as part of their curriculum that they have to take in order to help understand other cultures, and maybe suspension level on across the board will go down, because when you understand where people are going or coming from, it also helps you understand, you know, they're you know, it's not just, you know, African American culture, it's Latino culture, it's, you know, like Asian culture, like no one suspends, you know, the Asian communities for doing their cultures, but it's the Black and Latino cultures that no one, it seems like, not to say cares to understand, but it's not an issue if it's understood or not, because it's like, oh, that's just them. And it's not just us, it is just us. And understand us, then you'll understand that, you know, we have, you know, special talents and, and, and understand things on different levels, that just because you're teaching us one way doesn't mean that we're stupid or we don't understand. Try another way. And don't fail us if we give you, and I'm noticing that students now are getting half marks or marked things wrong, even if it's the correct answers, because they didn't do it the way that they were asked to do it. So, and it's like, you know, if I'm teaching my grandson one way how to do it, and he goes to the school he says, no, the teacher says to do it this way, or, you know, if the answer's right, then they're still marking it wrong, which is confusing a lot of them and frustrating them. And that's what causes some of them to say, I don't want to do it. Because regardless if I get it right, she's still saying it's wrong. So, I mean, a lot of things have to change within the school system, a lot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and I thank you for that. And this is what we need to take advantage of in terms of the 15% set aside. We really got to work with the different units within our district to come up with a succinct and a plan that's going to impact folks. And because we do have to change our practice, right? And this is... Right.
It's the educational system itself has not been changed since it was implemented. And it's time for a change because it doesn't accommodate everyone. And, it, you know, the No Act, the Act No Child Left Behind, all children, you know, that learn different from what the school system is saying they should learn and how they should learn is being left behind. That's all I'm saying. There shouldn't be one standard way of learning. There's several ways. And I think a lot of students that are going into special education classes, even when, like my grandson, as an example, he does complex algebraic equations with a pen and get answers, but he can't remember to simply how to tell time on a clock, or he can't remember, you know, how to count change. But then you put him in special ed where he's like, I don't belong in there, where there's children that are autistic. And not to say that one disability is greater than another, but then there's some children that don't belong in certain classes that they're categorized in. And, you know, like some where they want to identify and address us as having ED, emotional disturbance, when it's simply we go through the same things that other nationalities go through, but then you want to title as ED, but then don't want to tell us the effects that it caused on the long run for some of the students that's listening. Because if you're under the title of having emotional disturbances, you're never to become a police officer. And some kids right now, that's their dream, is to become a police officer. So they won't be able to join the armed services or do certain things in life that they think and aspire to do, because no one explained to them all the ramifications of having an ED title on them during their school years.
Well, those are some great points. And I, you know, yes, clap, because that was, you nailed it. I mean, one of the things that we have not talked about as a system is the harmful effect of special education, right? And what I mean by that, as a 20-year, you know, veteran teacher in education, right? No matter what service we provide in special education, there is a harmful effect to students. And what I mean by that is, if a student is in a special day class, they're going to develop some self-esteem issues, right? Because they're separated from their peers. And those are the things that we have to have conversations on at the IEP, right? Because if you can imagine, and different needs for different kids, but as a high school administrator, right, there was kids that had a one-on-one, a BII. It was so hard for them to socialize in during the break because they felt like they're always being watched. So it's really a tactful thing to do with kids is to how to embed that service, but at the same time, give them that independence. So we really got to look at the harmful effects and have IEP teams really consider that, because we were found out of compliance by the state for not indicating that in our IEPs. And that is something that we really got to look at is what is what.
I wonder if a better way to put it, if you don't mind my throwing in my two cents, is that it's a double-edged sword, you know, because there are pros and cons.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the individualized process that we have at the IEP teams. It's different for everybody. We can't make blanket statements. Every kid, every IEP that we have is supposed to be customized, and we try to do that to the best of our ability.
So the next question will be from Mr. Davis.
Okay, I'm here. I'm sorry, I'm here. I'm sitting in the car with the kids. The other question I had, are you working with the HEAT, with the HEAT program in Local District West and Access and Equity to actually help or get feedback
and information about exactly what they're doing to make this, the children not being suspended, actually go down within the West?
Yeah, and we have Dr. Woods. I believe Dr. Woods is new role is to support the Heat. And so she's been involved with our conversations and our surveys, and she's provided valuable input to that piece. So yes, we have been working with her.
Okay. And the other question was about suspensions. Have you ever thought about actually talking to the students that actually got suspended to see the effects that it actually has on them, so that, you know, administrators and teachers can actually know that sometimes you're trying to call, you're trying to keep order in the school, but it's actually sometimes harming some students. They don't know exactly what they're going through.
That's a great question, Mr. Davis. We have to look back at the surveys, but yeah, we could definitely consider that. That's a good point.
Thank you. And then the next question, now we're looping back around, we'll go to Mr. Newman.
I wanted to, just as a teacher that's been around for a long time, give a little historical like, of things that I personally have seen as far as regarding the overrepresentation of African Americans identified as ED. Almost, I want to say like 17 years ago, before we had the modified consent decree, they did a study and they started off with two or three schools to look at students that were identified as ED. Our school was one of those schools that I worked at, and we found that there were kids that were being found eligible for ED by teams without psychologists there. There was all this craziness going on. There was not really policies and procedures happening for students to be identified. It was really scary and like shocking, especially for me as a new teacher. And now we do have policies and procedures in place so that when someone is identified as ED and receives that eligibility, there are so many checks and balances that a lot of the things that were problems in the past have been taken care of as far as the policies and procedures. So now we need to go and look at, which I think is a really big accomplishment. Now we need to look at, you know, why is this happening and what can we do to prevent it, since we have our sort of internal structures are in place so that you really have to, you know, psychologists have to bring cases to case review panels to get them approved, to make sure that everything has been done correctly. And last year we had a meeting, it was one of the special education subcommittee meetings for the school board, and this issue of overrepresentation and suspension was brought up. And as a teacher, I've seen that we have these great policies about what we're supposed to do for all students, and very little that actually happens on a lot of the school campuses. And a lot of the issues, I think, to do with suspension and even overrepresentation, because it has to do with us not having systems and procedures in place for pre-referral and for our school-wide systems for all students. And I know that Mr. told you at that meeting, you had talked with some of your counterparts and said, yeah, we need to get together within general ed. What is being done now to see that general ed and special ed are working together to make sure that the necessary systems are in place? Because this has been an issue that's been going on for a long time, and there's a lot of plans, but I'm sort of waiting to see when are these plans going to actually give some fruit, where they're going to actually do that. And the only way for that to happen, I think, is by general ed and special ed taking on the issue together and, you know, something of substance happening, and accountability needs to be put on the schools to make sure that they're actually implementing these pre-referral process. Because a lot of our students, as a special ed teacher, I come across students all the time that if they had had appropriate intervention, I don't know if they would ever have been in my class. And so.
Yeah. No, I thank you for pointing that out. I mean, we have come a long ways in terms of our policies and procedures. We have the policies and procedures in place. The question is, how do we, are we following them with fidelity? Are we holding performance management dialogues to ensure that folks are going through an SSPT process before identified for special education services? Or if there are social emotional needs that need to be flagged so we can intervene. So we have these policies and procedures, but with fidelity in terms of following them, that's what we need to really hone in on. Now, I can tell you that our conversations with the Division of Instruction, the various folks, are happening constantly. We're presenting together now at the various different levels, and that's come a long way. I know for the longest time, special education was always thought of, and if the word special came to on an email, oh, that was Marco, that's your problem, right? I say that as a joke, but really it's we've come a long way in building that communication with Division of Instruction, the various folks. So now we need to have that happen at the local districts, and it's happening, right? It's just a matter of now we need to step it up with the data piece and have those conversations that can result in actual action items, right? And looking at the schools who are struggling with their school-wide PBS, and are they, you know, when you talk about social emotional support and training, you can't just have one PD for the year to say that was it, a checkbox. It has to be ongoing and it has to be constant. And it has to have student voice. Like, you know, the Mr. Newman asking students or not, yeah, I think it was you that, or no, Mr. Davis asked about interviewing kids that have been suspended. Those are things that we have to have. One of the most powerful things I've ever been involved with was when we would review school sites, when we would have student groups, student focus groups, and it included various different learners, right? You didn't just have your student body presidents, but it had your kiddos that were missing school, right? And so, how do you get feedback from kids to improve the system? And so those are the things that we have to have happen. And so we are meeting with Division of Instruction, and there are things that we need to put into place. And accountability is definitely one of them. But, you know, that's a hard conversation to have, right? And so we need to start having those pieces. So,
and, you know, just real quick, and sorry, I don't try to talk less, but as someone that's been on different committees and whatever, a lot of times the schools, when they're assessed about do they have these things in place, it's the schools themselves that are assessing it, which is a good thing, but a lot of times it's not really done in a way where everyone's involved, and sometimes the schools may assess themselves a little better than what's actually happening in reality. So I really think that there needs to be some checks on that, because a lot of times you can give yourself a high score on an assessment on how you're doing on those things, but the reality is when you look at it, it's not really happening. You might have a sign up that has it there in words, but in application they're not happening. And so we really need to look at what's really happening at schools, going beyond just what schools report themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. These are just really great points, and I think it also echoes earlier a comment made to Ms. Goldberg, and that she agreed that asking, actually surveying parents of students with disabilities across this district about what their experience is will give you a different kind of set of information and a different angle on things. But I will also now, the next question would be Mr. Peterson had a question, and then I think we're going to need to wrap this up. This has been a great conversation, thank you.
So I'm concerned anytime a claim is made that we're finding too many students with disabilities. If the problem is that we have a stigma for kids being diagnosed that way, then we need to eliminate the stigma. We just don't not give them the services. And, you know, if the problem is they're not getting the right services, then we need to work on the right services. But if it's simply reducing the amount of people that we find, I don't see that as a solution to anything.
Yeah, it's not so much, and I thank you for that, it's not so much reducing it's really identifying the kids that need it the most, right? That's where special education benefits kiddos, right? Is that we need to flag the kids that need it the most, right? Not everybody can benefit from special education, right? Because at the end of the day, the accommodations and differentiated instruction is paramount. That's just, that's good teaching, right? And every kid has different needs. And we're not saying that we want to identify kids less. We just want to make sure before we identify a kid with the learning disability that we have provided everything possible in terms of interventions and supports before going that route. Because to Ms. Ray's point, when you have certain eligibilities that you are given, let's be honest, once you're in special education, it's you're going to be there for quite some time. And as a special education teacher, for my job is to support and move kids, right? Obviously, depending on the child, but really we got to look at that piece of giving the kids that stigma, because whether we want to believe it or not, there are folks that it really harms kids, right? It really harms kids from doing certain things. If you have an ED eligibility, I mean, you cannot become a police officer, right? You can't, certain armed forces you can't go to, right? I mean, it's limiting. And so those are the things that we have to kind of, you know, as a system kind of take in. But to your point, Mr. Peterson, we're not saying that we want to identify less kids. We just want to make sure that we've done everything we can to intervene and prevent and support kids before going through that process. If that makes sense.
And can I just say also in making sure that we've done everything we can, we also have to make sure that schools have what they need, because when we talk about equity, you know, there are some schools that need more because of the community in which the school is in. So they need a general education counselor, or they need some other types of support so that students have, you know, somewhere to go and someone else to turn to. And what we find is that when schools have limited support, then that's when you may see special education eligibilities rise, because the schools are like, well, we don't have the support. We don't know how to support the student. So maybe special education will support them. And so, you know, as a district, we have to make sure that those schools and those communities, they might need more supports than what a school, you know, maybe in Brentwood needs, just, you know, keeping it real. So I think that's something else that we have to look at is, you know, we want to make sure that the schools do everything that they can, but we also want to make sure that the schools have enough. And so what school A needs, you know, may be different from what school B needs. And I think that's also something that has to be looked at.
Thank you. This has been a really great discussion. And I guess I would like to end it, and I'm sorry if I'm cheating asking a question, but how can the CAC become more involved in this work, because I think that this is something that's really compelling for a lot of our members, and it's such urgent work. So I'd love to hear about that.
Great question. I think, you know, as we talk about the engagement opportunities, one of the topics for the engagement opportunities will be significant disproportionality. So then we can have sessions where we specific, or breakout rooms where we specifically ask folks for their, you know, for their feedback. And if we can have CAC representation at those meetings, then we can talk a little bit about the planning of that. That'd be phenomenal.
Great. So we look forward to hearing more.
Okay.
So thank you. And you know, there are more questions in the chat. I hope that you can answer the questions and provide them in a response, you know, in a written form for our next meeting. And now I'll take it to agenda item 12. I'm going to hand it to Mr. John Perrin, our public relations officer, regarding the parent ambassador group for the CAC.
Thank you, Lisa. I apologize. Previously, my Zoom meeting went out, and I wasn't able to actually discuss my vision, my intent, and what I was hoping to achieve. First of all, the most important part that's paramount is to promote the actions and purpose of the CAC to the public, which is my role. And in order to do that, my initial thoughts were to utilize the new format, the network of the community of schools, which should be able to provide an excellent multiplier effect for outreach to the individual schools. And the term ambassador program, that comes from somebody last year, and Lisa, when I'm done, if you could please give her credit for this. It's a great metaphor for
me. Ms. Lundrabas.
Thank you. And it's a great metaphor for what we want to do. The ambassador who can go to the other side of the table and approach, mention, and take back the issues, the desires, and the passion for the group that's being dealt with. Because we've got administrators, we've got teachers, we've got students, we've got parents. They're all stakeholders, and none are more important than the other, but we all have our own perspectives and our paradigms. The reason I thought the community of schools was a great starting point, and Board Member Goldberg touched on it, and I was very happy she did. They have an existing org chart. They have already things in place that we can use to get the word out and get word back to us. It also reduces redundant efforts in messaging. So what I would hope to do is have a small group of CAC members and no more than two officers so we can avoid quorum requirements. And we can call it ambassador at the beginning, but keep in mind that's not literal. But we'll come up with our own lexicon and a formal framework for what we want to do as our first action item. Excuse me, my daughter is trying to come up and approach me here. Now, a couple of things. I'll talk about what I want to do, and then I'll talk just for a couple last points of what I hope we can do between now and the next meeting. We have to have a small group so it doesn't get overwhelming with consensus problems. We need to determine the function and goals for the group, a general framework, a timeline, and how we can get involved. Everybody who says, I'd like to do that, well, we kind of have to narrow the field a little bit, and that's one of the first things we have to work on. And I made a couple of notes about what I'm hoping we can do between now and the next meeting. And first and foremost, I don't expect, when I bring anything up, I almost always put it in the form of a question, because I think most important, you find the right questions, then look for the answers. Everybody doesn't have the right answer just in the tip of their tongue. To outreach to the community of schools, district representatives, they're already there. They've got multiple schools right there under their umbrella. So I think the outreach to them is number one. I think we need I like, Lisa, what you had said, a 3-to-1 ratio. If we have no more than two officers, we should have at least six members. And so I believe the studies I've done for small groups, you know, no more than nine people. So maybe seven members, two officers might sound good, but I'm not being insistent on any of these things. I don't want to be the boss of this group. What codes and regulations we will operate within, our guidelines and our parameters, how do you let the officers know that you want to be involved? I'll leave that to Lisa when I'm done to please instruct people how and who to approach to get on a list. Now, the most important thing, what I hope to gain from this, is exactly what the question to Board Member Goldberg was. A better back and forth between the board and the committees and the schools. Because, for example, right now, when we finish at 4:00, there's a parent advisory committee meeting, and the community of school representative from my area sent out something, and it got posted on our school page for parents, and it doesn't mention us. Okay, so as public relations officer, I look at that and I shake my head, and first thing I have to do is just stop assess that and say, how could that be? Which is the right question. And then together we can search for the answers for that. So with that, I'll hand it back over to Lisa.
So I think, Mr. Perrin, I think one of the questions that has come up is, you know, what is the purpose of the group? I see it written in the agenda, looking into the formation of a CAC ambassador group to build awareness of the CAC across LAUSD. So is that the intention and the objective of the group? If you could just clarify to the membership.
Yes, we want to formalize what I just said, but not get over formal with this. It's going to be a working group. This is not going to be a situation where we have a quorum. The ambassador is, as I said, it's a metaphor. And what we basically want to do is have a way, a portal between our committee and the different schools. There's way too many principals for me to try to call and do public relations with. So the community of schools is a new thing. I believe we approach them. I'm sure they'll assist us. They'll include us in some other situation. It's to get the word out. A public relations officer. We have two publics. I mentioned this before. We have the public community at large and the public that is internal, which is teachers, admin, parents, and students.
I have another question for you. I hope you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
Schools, I love that. I think it's such a great idea organizationally. Only issue is that the LAUSD CELPA also covers kids with IEPs who are not necessarily in communities of schools, non-public schools, charter schools. So how would you reach all parents of students with IEPs in LAUSD so that we can ensure accountability at all school types, all school models?
Understood. Now that's something I definitely don't have the answer for, but our first step is to notate those questions. We can, low-hanging fruit, community of schools. Okay, there's the start. But what are we missing with that? And we need to identify those things first and approach them. So step one is to identify it. So that's my answer to your question, is to identify the inroads that we can use for that outreach. And I appreciate so much what you say, because that's very real. There are adults out there that we keep mentioning the kids, right? But it doesn't stop there.
Okay. So I would just believe that next steps would be for the group to be formed.
Yes.
And I think that anyone who is interested should either put it in the chat or reach out to directly to me or Mr. Perrin about their interest. Now, I just want to bring this back to Dr. Dixon. Is there some sort of protocol we need to be observing in terms of PCS? Should the meetings be managed by PCS? Is there something in policy that says that needs to happen, and how, and et cetera?
Well, you know, I mean, at this point in time, is this informational, or is it something that you want to act upon?
This is something that I want to leave as my legacy. We've got this year, which is a very different standout year for issues and problems. And I think certain things are coming to the forefront that may have been just brushed aside and handled a little bit in a lackadaisical fashion. But some of these things are really presenting themselves, and you can see it in the chat room. You can hear it in people's voices. And when we all get off Zoom and talk with neighbors, friends, and colleagues, there's a lot of passion behind some of this stuff. So obviously, what you're mentioning, the pillars, okay, I would say there are certain pillars we want to identify. The informational aspect, getting the word out. Another pillar is the approachability. How do people reach us? Do people really wish that they knew they could sit in on this meeting today? They don't know about the meeting. So they can sit back and say, why doesn't the board do this? Why doesn't the city council do that? It's because they don't come to the website. Having a website is a passive billboard. And if you don't drive by it, if you don't navigate there, you don't find out. Okay. So we have to do outreach and make sure that our inroads are available to those people who want it. And also our outreach to let people know that we exist, what we do, please get involved, and what help we need. Because we also have to go to the board and tell them, this is what people are telling us. You might not be hearing it. Trust us, because we are the portal to tell you that. So I would like to be the hub, the catalyst. I believe we can be a catalyst for certain things, but not for everything. So if we make sure that we do not take what we want to do to its illogical conclusion, but if we take things to their logical conclusion, we can solve a number of these issues, identify even more issues, and hand it off to the next generation of leadership, parents, and board members. That's my goal.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Perrin. So I'm seeing people put in the chat, they're interested. I think the basic function is to promote awareness of the CAC. And so at least the public can attend, even if, you know, if we have many, many people interested, membership spots will become highly, you know, hard to procure, but at least members can watch and be involved. So, I mean, not members, outside public. So it sounds good. I see people putting in the chat that they're interested, and we will discuss this further at our officers meeting and start establishing the group.
Yes, if I may, the first thing I believe, Dr. Dixon, you hit it right on the head. We'll identify the pillars, we'll get some members, and then we can have hopefully some meetings where everybody can get their voice heard by the working group, not just a select few. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. So then we'll go on to item 13. You would think I would really like know my Roman numerals by now. I have to think for a second. X111 13. New business for possible action at future meetings. Do we have any new business that anybody wanted to bring to the floor? Is it out of order to ask about the local plan, and what is the plan for having CAC members involved in the local plan?
If I may, I believe that new business is my realm, and I would like to just say I don't have any, and that may just be from the bylaws. I read it somewhere, but I personally don't have any new business other than what I just mentioned, and I'll turn it over to you.
The bylaws. I wasn't aware that that was a public relations realm. I apologize if I overstepped, but the question means about the CAC being involved in the working group for the local plan. I know that I will be there because I'm the chairperson and it's on November 4th. But have we heard any news? I don't know if Mr. Tolge is still with us or anyone from the Division of Life can advise on this.
Yeah, we are definitely going to include our CAC folks. An invitation will go out, and then if people can't attend, we'll invite others. But that, look for that invite to come out by the end of the week or first thing next week.
Thank you, Mr. Tolge. And anyone who is interested, just note the date, November 4th. Mr. Tolge, is it possible to know around what time of day it would be? So we can put it in our calendars to try
to... Yeah, well, that's a good... Let me look at my calendar real quick. It's obviously going to be through Zoom. but and my calendar is taking forever to pop up. We are looking at 1:30 to 3:00, and I'll send a reminder out to you, Ms. Moscow, just to kind of so you can pass that along. I'll send it out to the PCS group.
Yes, I can't send it out to the entire membership, but. PCS can.
Yes.
The Brown Act has very specific requirements around contact, as you may know.
Right.
So next item would be item 14. Do we have any announcements from any members or staff?
Yo tengo un anuncio.
I have one announcement. I have an announcement. We have a training for dyslexia on October 23rd. It's on a Friday from 2 to 4 p.m. I sent the flyer to the PCS office, and since in this month of October, we are having Dyslexia Awareness Month as a learning disability or condition. And so that is why we are promoting with the POL organization, with Dyslexia Decodification, and with the Parent Council in Highland Park. I don't know if Mr. Antonio Plasencia can send all the members the flyer so that they can participate. I don't know if right now, if you want me to talk about what dyslexia is, maybe. Ms. Mosco.
Señor Ortiz, I'll say it in English. If you can take 2 more minutes to tell us about dyslexia, and thank you for your announcement.
Bueno. Okay. Muchísimas gracias.
Very well. So thank you so much. So dyslexia right now is a condition that, thanks to the work of a group of parents and teachers as well, we have been able to accomplish that the state and also, therefore, the districts need to start to give support, direct support to students with dyslexia. The dyslexia disability is something that is cognitive. The area that is most affected is the reading, and that is why these children have a problem with comprehension. There are different types of, there's although moderate to mild cases and also severe cases. 1 in 5 children can have dyslexia. One of the early signals that is very obvious is that many of the children have problems when reading, but it's nothing that the letters move. It's something that is cognitive. And that is why we are promoting that the district provide resources, appropriate resources, so that the students can meet their academic goals, because we have very talented children. They are very talented children in the area of arts, in the area of instruments, in the area of painting, in different areas. And so one of the programs that we are pushing for to help these children, but it's not just the children with dyslexia, but the children in all areas, because 54% of the children of the Los Angeles Unified School District are not reading at grade level. So the program that is most appropriate to learn how to read, which is an essential tool for learning, is structured literacy. And this program has helped not only the students with dyslexia, but any child that has problems with reading. So I hope that we can unite so that we are able to help all these children, and including children with dyslexia.
Thank you, Ms. Ortiz. And can you put the information in the chat of when the trainings for dyslexia will be? Or is it better to send the flyer via email?
El volante lo tiene el señor Antonio.
The flyer is in Mr. Plasencia's hands. I sent it via email. And you can ask Mr. Plasencia to distribute it to the members, because we have to spread the word and we have to help these children.
So Mr. Plasencia, you will send it out to the membership. Is Mr.
Plasencia?
I also sent it to Ms. Angie Cardenas, and I also sent it to Gloria Costa, and if you didn't get it, maybe you can tell me how I can let you guys know.
To Dr. Dixon. Mr. Dixon, would you be able to pass this on to the membership?
Sí, y está en inglés y en español y va a haber traducción.
Yes, it's in English and Spanish, and there will be interpretation.
Ponga en el chat del señor Dixon su correo electrónico, si no, yo lo busco.
Maybe Mr. Dixon can put his email on the chat. If not, I can look for it.
Thank you. Thank you. It is Dyslexia Awareness Month. So thank you, Ms. Ortiz. And fact of the day, Gavin Newsom has dyslexia. If you Google it, there's a wonderful interview with him about it and him connecting via Zoom with a student with dyslexia and talking about their challenges.
I do not have
yes. any.
There,
I see,
all
yes.
we're doing is talking Very about nice. What it possibly would
be. And surprising to hear. I hear someone.
Somebody needs to mute yourself.
Okay. So, do we have any other announcements? We are actually very ahead of schedule. This has never happened before.
Yes, I'd like to make a quick announcement.
Okay.
Miss Maria Daisy Ortiz, Miss Porter put her email and the chat, so you can definitely email that to Miss Porter, and we'll follow up on that. I just want to say, I'm glad to commend all of you.
Okay.
For your insight and your support and dedication for our students. I mean, all of our students. You know, I have to say I was very, very impressed with all of your conversations around equity, and that means a lot for LAUSD, and we have to move in that direction. So I commend all of you, and I just want to say that student voice is critical. It really is. We have to listen to our children and to their voices. So with that said, thank you very much.
Okay.
Ms. Mosco, may I also just remind everyone about the reimbursement form? If yes. they're in need of the child care reimbursement, to please send that email to our family website, that email address. Thank you. And I think Ms. Carrion said she had a question.
Sí, más que pregunta, un anuncio.
More than anything of a question, I think it's just an announcement. And I've placed the stuff on the chat. I don't think they have seen the chat, and I just wanted to announce that there was a meeting for distance learning. I don't know if the chairperson had any kind of intervention in the board meeting on students with special education students. I would like to see what they're doing. If somebody could give a recommendation on the phone on the first Tuesday of this month when that report was presented on modification and inclusion for the learning distance learning budget, there were many phone calls, I think. I don't know, if maybe 50 of them, and there was only 3 people there that were there to advocate for students, general students and students in special education, and it's one of the components where we as members should be including and informing ourselves about the agendas that the board posts, so that the members have the opportunity to attend and to advocate for the students. I think that is a very important issue that we need to, not only the members, but also the executive board, advocating for the needs, not only because we also need to, as Mr. Perron said, that we are heard, because if not, we will continue to not being heard. There's executive boards gone and come, and they have not been respected. And so I think that this executive board, along with the new members that I have seen that do have a potential, that they do make that change so that we can see. And if you can ask for that report about the modifications that were done for the distance learning Board of Education meetings and what it included about special education. Thank you.
This is a really important comment. Thank you, Ms. Carrion. I put into the chat the next LAUSD board meeting. She raises the concern that no one, not enough people were there. speaking on issues that pertain to students with special needs at the board. And I do think that it might be a good practice to put in our chat when next board meetings are. Now, mind you, as Mr. Newman has already pointed out in our chat, that if I were to go to the board, I would first have to have the explicit conversation with the CAC that I'm representing the CAC with what I'm about to say. So I can't just decide, I'm going to go to the board tomorrow and I'm going to speak on behalf of the CAC. It has to be a conversation in advance. I often go to the board speaking on behalf of myself, but I never do it on behalf of the CAC unless it's something that's been approved. Yeah. So, however, and no member here can go to the board and speak on behalf of the CAC without explicit approval. We have one more minute. But we can individually go and speak at the board and speak on behalf of ourselves. So I put in the chat our next board meeting. It's November 10th, 2 p.m. And time permitting, I will put in the chat our next committee of the whole meeting.
Gracias, señora Musco.
Yes, thank you.
And the next.
I didn't go as a member. I went as Ms. Carrion.
Can I comment quickly what she said? Because, and just say, like I said, when I speak in front of the board, I'm speaking as myself as a parent of my children who have IEPs. But just to comment on that, I was on hold on the phone because I physically couldn't be at the meeting. They're allowing such a limited amount of time, and the majority of the calls that they took had to do with the Armenian genocide resolution, so none of us could speak on that public hearing, unfortunately. And I did try to call in other people trying to call in to speak about students with disabilities, exceptional needs. We didn't get, so we can't physically go to those board meetings when we're calling in on the line. It's randomized, but unfortunately, they limited the amount of time that we can't get through to make those comments anymore.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ms. Zamora, pero sí se pudo porque yo estuve ahí presente.
Señora Carrion, okay, it's 4 p.m.
I think presently there.
She couldn't go in person, no podía ir en persona, y llamar es muy difícil, porque no siempre puede entrar la llamada. But it is 4 p.m., so I hereby declare this meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Good job.
Okay.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Have a nice week. Bye.
To leave.